I'm Dr. Robert Mather. Welcome to my podcast. My podcasts are available exclusively at theconservativesocialpsychologist.com. Today is October 7th, 2021. My last podcast, I talked a little bit about corn that could suppress sperm production and motility, I guess is what it was, and the possibility of using that strategically in certain areas for voting to suppress the population. I guess that would be considered true voter suppression, right? Something else I've been thinking about, you know, refrigerators that have cameras in them. I was asked one time if I wanted one of those refrigerators. I said, hell no, absolutely not. There's no way I want the Chinese to have the ability to hack my refrigerator and see what I buy in there. But what's more interesting is the possibility, I think, as we get more of these smart devices like that, that somebody could hack into all the refrigerators at the same time and cause a controlled spoilage of the food, right? But anyway, that's just more of my crazy talk before I get into the substance of this podcast. So I want to talk about two different studies today. One of them is what I'm calling the small talk study. This study was done by Nicholas Epley at the University of Chicago, published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. So Epley has done amazing, very innovative studies over the years. I'm a big fan of his work and have been for, I guess, nearly 20 years. And this one's published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, which is the top, most rigorous, best journal in my field. For this study, he did 12 different experiments with 1,800 participants to demonstrate his effect. And I'll just summarize a little bit of what he did. So he brought people in, participants in pairs, and he gave them either a shallow topic or a deep topic to discuss with each other. And so things like the shallow topic might be they were assigned to discuss the best TV show that they watched in the past month, or what do you think about today's weather, right? So you're not going into a lot of depth when you're discussing those things with somebody else. The deep topics were things like describe a time you cried in front of another person, or if a crystal ball could tell you the truth about yourself, your life, your future, or anything else, what would you want to know? And so those elicited deeper responses, as you would expect. Before the participants had these discussions, so each person in the pair is a participant, and they've come in randomly, and they don't know each other, and they're going to have these discussions, and they've been assigned the topics. So before the participants interacted with each other, they predicted things like how awkward they thought the discussion would be, how much enjoyment they thought they would get out of the discussion, how connected they thought they would feel. And then, so they predicted those about each other, and they also predicted what they thought the other person, you know, how much enjoyment the other person would get from the conversation, how connected the other person would feel, how awkward the other person would feel. So they connected, they discussed those things about themselves, they rated those things about themselves, and then also about the other person and with how they would experience it. And both people were doing that. So in general, across all of these studies, participants underestimated the amount of enjoyment and connectedness that they got from the discussions, regardless of the topic, shallow or deep topic. So they thought that they would enjoy it less, they thought they would feel less connected, and in fact, at the end, afterwards, they rated them higher. And then they overestimated the amount of awkwardness for both deep and shallow conversations. So they overestimated how much they thought they would feel awkward and that the other person would feel awkward too. People liked the deep conversations more in general. And so they derived more enjoyment. So that even though they liked all of them, they liked the deeper ones more. They got more enjoyment, more fulfillment from the deeper conversations. But outside of the laboratory, when they're not assigned topics, people tend to shy away from that type of thing, most likely because they underestimate the enjoyment that the other person would have in such a conversation. This idea was confirmed later when participants were told that they would meet with either a caring or uncaring person, and then they did the same study as they did before, only they think they're meeting with a caring or uncaring person. And people got to pick the topics, and they tended to do more with the deep conversations when they thought it was a caring person, and they did less with the deep conversation when they thought it was an uncaring person. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where you kind of get what you expect. And another study, they told people the results of all of these studies, right? The overestimation and the underestimation of things. And then people chose deeper conversation topics when they were kind of understood the rules of social behavior and knew that that was not going to be penalized and that both parties would get more enjoyment and fulfillment from that. So pair this with the context of three things that we already know from social psychology. We know the matching principle, which is we match levels of self-disclosure. Self-disclosure is how much you tell about yourself. So we match it. So if you give a little bit, somebody else will tell you a little bit about that. If you give a lot, somebody will give you a lot. And that we're very sensitive to that rule. So if somebody doesn't match, that sends a clear kind of indicator of how deep the relationship is. Because people tend to disclose more as relationships develop. That's the second thing we know about it. The third thing we know is that self-disclosure in general deepens social connections. So social self-disclosure deepens social connections. people disclose more as relationships develop. And then there's the matching principle, which can send a clear sign if you come all in with a whole bunch of disclosure and somebody doesn't reciprocate that. That can be very, that's the awkwardness that people were underestimating in the conversations. That's where that can come from. So it's the fear of the lack of reciprocation that keeps folks on the social sidelines when it comes to self-disclosure and the level of relationships they could develop with other people. A second study I want to talk about has to do with my area of industrial organizational psychology. So that's psychology applied to the workplace. One of the symposiums at the IO, big IO conference, the SIOPS, Society for Industrial and Organizational Psychology, they had over 140 attendees of the sessions in this particular type of session that had insights from several different countries: United States, Canada, Australia, the UK, the Netherlands, Romania, Dominican Republic, Kenya, and then some more generally from Europe. And so they asked these about what are the trends for industrial organizational psychology in the workplace across the world. And there were two main findings that came up that were reported by people. These are all people that are in the field working with businesses. Remote work is one of the two biggest issues, and then diversity, equity, and inclusion. And what I think is going to be interesting to you, we all know about remote work, right? We're all doing Zoom stuff. You're all listening to things, Teams calls, that kind of stuff. We know what those are now. And we know all the challenges with kids being home, school not being in session, all that stuff. But diversity, equity, inclusion, I think, is interesting to this audience because it was different across different countries. So, for example, religion, beliefs, and ideals. So we're on the, there's a usual list that we have in the U.S. that we think of when people talk about diversity, equity, inclusion. So race, gender, age, sexual orientation, that kind of stuff. But there were also others on the list that surprised a lot of people, that religion, beliefs, ideals, right? That means having equity and inclusion of people that have different political beliefs and things like that came to the top of the list as an issue that's going on in business that IO psychologists are having to address that would probably baffle a lot of people that think about diversity, equity, and inclusion in terms of only race, age, and sexual orientation, right? That religion and political ideology and those kind of things are also just as much on the list. Also, it varied across countries. So there are different countries. Race isn't even an issue. In the Dominican Republic, national origin was the biggest concern, not race. Race wasn't a concern. In Kenya, it was social class and tribal diversity. And so different countries have different kind of definitions of what falls under the needed diversity, equity, and inclusion. I saw that with one of my colleagues in a chapter that we wrote. We were discussing the state of critical race theory and social justice and diversity, equity, inclusion in the United States. And we had international reviewers, and they said, oh, no, that's not what social justice means. Nobody could ever possibly mean that. That's just crazy. And we had to respond, nope, that's what's going on in the U.S. That's their definition of social justice. Anyway, so one last thing I want to talk about here, and that's a good segue to hate, friends, and loyalty, right? And so there's a lot of hate out there on the internet. People will attack each other, and you know, people make friends, people attack each other. Be loyal to your friends, right? And fight like hell for them, right? That's the important part of being a social creature, right? Is making friends, bonding with people, and then helping protect and defend them as they do the same for you. That's the whole point of having a coalition of humans. And don't forget that I wrote a book, right? Purchase my book, Implicit Biases and the Unconscious, Liberal Biases, Racial Prejudice, and Politics, for sale at barnesandnoble.com. It's your tool to fight critical race theory. Listen to my podcast exclusively at theconservativesocialpsychologist.com.